Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Issues in 30 Days, issue 26, Education and the Mayoral Race. We just heard from Bill Thompson. With me now, Christopher Cerf, Deputy Chancellor for Strategy and Innovation the last few years, now with the Bloomberg Reelection Campaign. And Mr. Cerf, thanks for doing this. Welcome to WNYC.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
That's a great job title, being in charge of innovation. What do you consider the most innovative changes that you've been able to make?
Well, there's several. The first is we took accountability as the sort of centerpiece of what we've done. Everyone talks about accountability, but it's been very actually hard for school systems to do anything about it. We think that the purpose of a school system is to advance student learning, to close the achievement gap, and we now hold everybody in this system accountable for the school moving forward in those domains. But partnered with accountability, we think that having a highly centralized system in which the central bureaucracy's job is to tell schools what they need to do better essentially does not work. And we have pushed money, about $350 million, and authority down to our schools and school communities and principals and empowered them to make change. And holding them accountable for results and giving them the authority and the funds to do it have been central to what we do. And the third thing I will say is this is all about the quality of teachers. I have the highest respect for teachers. I was one for 4 years, and doing everything in our power as a system to continue to improve the training and quality of teachers is critical to success.
And listeners, our phones are still open on the same question as for Bill Thompson. What would you like to see done, or what question would you like to ask of this longtime Bloomberg education official about innovation and policy over the next 4 years? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. So you emphasized accountability and pushing accountability down the chain. When I asked Bill Thompson a moment ago the teacher pay for performance question, he said if teachers are paid for performance, it should not be tied to the individual because it's too unfair. You don't know what kind of a class you get from year to year. It could be tied to how a school as a community does. Do you have a position that's any different from that?
I don't. We agree on two things. One, it is very important that bonuses be tied to student achievement and not to sort of softer input measures, if you will. I didn't hear him say that, but I think that may have been implicit in his response. And second, I do agree that having bonuses keyed to the success of the educational community is a very, very, very important value. And that sort of puts us in the middle between those who are on the extreme left who say it has to be an individual-based bonus and those on the extreme right. I got that backwards, but those on the extreme right to say it has to be individual-based and those on the left saying there should be no bonuses at all.
So continuing our focus on the future, what three innovations would you most like to see the city schools make over the next 4 years? I know the mayor is running on his record, and that's, you know, a matter of debate for people who like, don't like different things that have been done. What about the next 4 years?
At the center of all of these is technology. There is no question that the education sector has been a laggard when it's come to innovative uses of technology to advance student learning. And let me mention a couple things in that domain. Children learn differently. They have different styles, they have different skills, they have different backgrounds, they have different issues, and so on. We are already within the Department of Education piloting programs that design essentially individual learning plans where children get a combination of educational opportunities, whether through large group instruction, whether through tutoring, whether through small group instruction, even through video games and other things that are keyed toward specific learning. And I think that is absolutely the way of the future. We want to continue to do that. Secondly, research will tell you that more than anything else, any innovation, the quality of the teacher in the classroom is the by far the most important determinant of a child's success, especially for children who come from challenged circumstances. We do not do a very good job of using technology to identify teachers who will be successful in the classroom, to give them training that is targeted for their particular strengths and weaknesses, and for making sure that every year they're getting better and better and better, not at some ethereal idea, but at what actually counts in driving student achievement. I think technology will be very important in that as well.
So you're talking about technology. Bill Thompson, I don't know if you heard that interview in the green room when you were waiting to come on, but when we asked him to list innovations going forward, he said education of the whole child, not just teaching to the test. He talked about having an educator as chancellor, not a lawyer like Joel Klein, reducing class size and dealing with overcrowdedness. And he kept coming back to class size. Do you think class size would not do more for the students you were just talking about than technology, than some kind of machines?
Well, first of all, I am in favor, and the mayor is in favor, of reducing class size. And the record shows that in every grade, I believe but one, class size is lower than it was when Mayor Bloomberg took over the school system in 2002. And by the way, overcrowding of schools is also dramatically lower now than it was before. And nobody thinks we can't go further and do more and better. But the trend lines are both very positive and very good. As you pointed out, class size reduction is probably the single most expensive reform of any, and that makes sense. It's, you know, we reduce class, you need more teachers. We have to decide where to spend our money. For example, we have increased teacher salaries by 43%, also very expensive, which makes our pay scale comparable to the suburbs, which prevented a real outflow of great teachers to communities outside of New York City. I do think we should continue to reduce class size. I don't think the other innovations I mentioned are an alternative to that. But I think you have to strike a balance and get the most for our children for the dollar invested.
Mr. Thompson also talked about innovating in the curriculum because he thinks things are becoming too flat now with the focus on standardized tests. So he says that you need better reading and writing, and science is disappearing, he says, and same with math. And so focusing on a more innovative curriculum, because at the moment the pressure to get everybody tested and tested and tested under No Child Left Behind over some of the New York reforms is flattening out the curriculum in terms of innovation. Do you disagree?
I do rather fundamentally disagree, both with the situation as he describes it and with the focus. So let me start with this. People like to demonize standardized tests. I'm a parent. I understand the argument. The single greatest revolution in public education reform in the last 30 years are not vouchers or charter schools, which have taken all the oxygen out of the air. They are what's called the standards movement. It is saying that we're not going to teach based on the whim of a particular educator or teacher or school, but we as a society are going to define a body of knowledge and a set of skills that children should have by certain milestone ages in life. In doing that, by the way, we joined the rest of the modern world. You cannot have standards without having assessments. Teaching children the content of what they are going to be evaluated on is exactly the right focus for a school system, and that is exactly what great schools do. They do not do it. A great school gets great results on tests not by teaching test-taking skills, but by teaching the content. You and I'm not going to presume to know your age, but every Friday I had a chapter test. Called a standardized test if you want. It was based on, if we were studying algebra, binomial equations, I would get tested on binomial equations. It should be no different from that.
So you don't think teaching to the test is having a detrimental effect in the New York City schools?
I think teaching to the test is a phrase that ends conversations rather than begins them. I do believe that teaching test-taking skills is not good for the long-term educational interests of children. I believe that focusing on the standards that we have decided as a society are important, and focusing on that and then evaluating the degree they've learned those standards is exactly the right focus. And the social science evidence is powerful on that front.
Christopher Cerf, Bloomberg education official, now with the campaign. My guest on WNYC, we just heard from Bill Thompson, his take on education as an issue in the race going forward in the next 4 years. And Mary in Washington Heights here on WNYC. Hello, Mary.
I was a teacher for 16 years, and I just resigned. And last year, I saw so many horrible things happen in my school because of the new system of accountability. For example, because principals were being rated and receiving bonuses on whether or not their school scored an A, suspensions were tied up in that. So the principal just closed the suspension room and stopped suspending so that the school would not show any suspensions. And there was an entire class of bilingual students who did not have a command of the English language, and they all passed the English exam because either scores were being changed or it was too easy. And there's no accountability. Nowhere along the line do lights go off, an alarm go off, or someone says, you know what, this doesn't make sense. How does a school that the previous year had 40 suspensions suddenly have zero? How does a class of bilingual students who are, you know, receiving services, suddenly everyone passes the English exam? So this new system, there's, you know, I know my principal probably received $12,000 in bonuses or $24,000 in bonuses. You know, there's no one looking out and saying this doesn't make sense. And what's happened is that this system is based on the fact that there's a thought that principals and people in education are moral and that they're going to do the right thing, and it just doesn't happen.
Are you accusing, Mary, your former principal of actually changing the test scores on those English tests, for example, from failing to passing?
I can't say whether or not it was changed. I will say that it doesn't make sense in an entire class of students who do not have a command of the English language pass the exam. Mm-hmm. And I will say there were kids who should be suspended that were not suspended because it would look badly upon the school.
Mary, thank you very much. And I'm sure you can't say what happened in that particular school, which she didn't identify, but is it a problem with the bonus-based system for principals that if they're going to be paid based on how many people pass the test, on how many kids get suspended, that there's going to be a temptation to fudge in one way or another?
Brian, I think we have to start with the alternative, which is an absence of accountability for student learning altogether, which is exactly what this system had during the years before Mayor Bloomberg had the courage to ask for accountability for the school system. Any system of accountability is going to have occasional problems with it. I think it's inevitable, and I promise you, in a system of 1,500 schools, 1,500 principals, 1,500 school communities, you can find an example of almost everything. The problem I have with this, I think, very sensible caller, is that so many people take those problems and say the alternative is not to have a serious accountability system. And I will tell you that I believe Mayor Bloomberg and Chancellor Klein's accountability system have been central in closing the shameful achievement gap between rich and poor, between different demographic groups, between dramatically closing the gap between New York City and the rest of the state. And I think accountability is part of that.
Is there a risk in putting as much focus on the principal as you have over recent years? Can we really trust principals to run schools without the involvement of district superintendents or regions like we had in the old system? In a mass system like New York, you know, there are going to be a lot of good principals, a lot of average principals, a lot of bad principals. Can a bad principal have more power to mess up a school now?
Complicated question. First of all, I think most of our principals are pretty terrific, and I believe they're getting better and better and better every year. I don't think the answer to sort of manage the variation in the quality of principals is more top-down bureaucracy, more compliance checks, more box checking, more inspectors, more you better do this or else. I think that the history of school reform in this country shows that that kind of sort of Soviet-style top-down, we know what you ought to do, and now we're going to make sure that you do it, doesn't work. It just doesn't work. I do think, though, taking your question from a slightly different direction, that successful schools have a collaborative approach to education within the school community itself. And that very much includes an inclusive perspective towards the wisdom of our great teachers and other educators. I do think school communities are by far in the best position to craft the path for the success of their children than bureaucrats generally are.
You say top-down, Soviet-style system, but how are the principals held accountable? Because, of course, you're talking about accountability. Other than with incentives for bonuses, if they don't get many suspensions, if they have a lot of kids passing the reading test, where does that accountability come from, if not from above?
Well, the accountability system, you are quite right, Brian, is indeed set by the system at large. For example, you can't break the law, or we expect you to have a certain percentage of your kids graduate or to make certain progress on schools. That is not something, obviously, you leave to the particular whims of particular schools. But the accountability system is vastly deeper, I think, than perhaps is sometimes assumed. There is indeed a very careful monitoring of compliance with, for example, special education requirements, requirements for English language learners, health and safety, and so on. So it's not it is not a let a thousand flowers bloom kind of situation.
Let me get one more caller in for you before we run out of time. Rick, in Red Hook, you're on WNYC with Christopher Cerf, education official in the mayor's campaign. Hello.
Hi, thanks so much for taking my call. I'm calling just a quick question about the arts education in the public schools. I mean, I just was reading in the paper the other day yet another study that confirms that when students are offered a good curriculum in the arts, they tend to graduate in greater numbers and do better going forward than when there aren't arts offered in high schools. What is Bloomberg's plan for increasing the arts education in the schools?
Is there a specific plan over the next 4 years? Because you know a lot of people complain that with the standards movement on the basics, it seems like there's less arts education.
There is a plan, and we are absolutely, and the mayor in particular, is very, very supportive of the continuing expansion of arts in the school. And by the way, I agree with the premise of the question. This is not a binary thing. You focus on reading, writing, and arithmetic, or you focus on arts and other important aspects of the whole person. Great schools do both. And just to clarify the facts here, even during challenging economic times and completely in parallel with rising test scores in reading, writing, and math, students are now receiving more and more instruction in music, visual arts, performance arts, and so on. We do have a ways to go. Something like over 95% of elementary school students do get art in the schools, and the numbers at all levels are, in fact, rising.
Anything specific for the next 4 years? Then we're going to run out of time.
Well, we just want to make sure that every single school offers a variety of artistic modalities. We want to encourage that. And I think I would say more broadly that we want to continue to convey to our great principals and teachers that this is not education is not a one-dimensional effort. It really does involve developing the entire child, and arts are a big part of that.
Are there any requirements? Why not have a standardized test in some kind of art or music as part of it? If we're going to test them in other things that are considered basic, why don't we consider the arts basic by that measure?
Well, in fact, there are standards. They're set by the state, and we are held accountable by the state for compliance with the standards, and they're measured by offerings. It's an interesting idea, Brian. I mean, on the one hand, people will say there's too much tests. On the other hand, there's the idea of adding additional tests in arts, and so I think that's something that's worthy of some thought, but I'm not sure I'd actually go that route.
Christopher Cerf has been the official in charge of education, of innovation, forgive me, in Mayor Bloomberg's education department. He is now with the campaign. Thank you very much for coming on.
Thank you very much. A great pleasure.
And that is 30 Issues in 30 Days, Issue 26, Education and the Mayoral Race. Tomorrow we will look at jobs and the mayoral race. And then don't forget, tomorrow night at 7, join me for a live online chat simultaneous to the next mayoral debate. It'll be on Channel 7 and on WNYC, and we can comment on it together in real time during our simultaneous online chat during the mayoral debate at 7 tomorrow night at WNYC.org. Now, coming up in just 60 seconds, an old world job that is hip again in Brooklyn, the butcher. Stay with us.